Hello and welcome to the first Albion Roar of 2023 here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and, well, Happy New Year, everyone. And 2023 has got off to the best possible start following our 4-1 demolition of Everton. It's been quite the week for young Evan Ferguson, who scored his first Premier League goal against Arsenal on New Year's Eve, and he followed up with a full debut and another goal at Goodison. The Arsenal game was very much a case of what could have been had Kari Matoma's second goal of the game been allowed to stand in what was a stirring fight back, but in truth, the damage had already been done. This was also the week that we welcomed back a world champion. And my God, did we do it in style as Alexis McAllister had his very own ticker tape parade at the training ground, which had many feeling for the cleaners. This weekend is very much a return of cup fever, sort of, as we travel to Middlesbrough in the FA Cup third round. Are your pulses racing yet? And also, this week, we were saddened to hear of the loss of Douglas Eaton, father of Robert, who passed away at the age of 99. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the voice of BBC Sussex Sport, a man whose voice is heard across the globe to much delight and quite often much despair. It's Johnny Cantor. Welcome back, Johnny. Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you guys, and a happy new year to everyone.
And to you too, mate. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very good. Well, I'm a little bit tired. It's a little bit of a late return from Goodison Park last night, but the journey always goes a little bit quicker when you've won, doesn't it? So it was plenty to talk about in the car on the way home. But yeah, tremendous night.
And when you're an Albion correspondent, day off doesn't really exist, does it? This is your third thing on your day off today?
It has, yeah. It's been quite, sorry. I mean, I know, don't worry, it's fine. But, you know, I think it just is a reflection, really, of the interest in the club, the results, the players. And, of course, it's that dreaded January transfer window as well, isn't it? Mm. So inevitable, I guess, that these things are going to happen. But football never stops. And sometimes football commentators and reporters never stop either.
I mean, as far as the window is concerned, I mean, we're basically just trying to ignore it at the moment. And I mean, the club has done a pretty good job of allaying many fears. And Alexis himself, he said that he's in no rush to go anywhere. So, and actually, let's start with Alexis, Johnny, because you've had a chat with him this week. And
it
was my highlight of 2022, Alexis winning the World Cup. I mean, it was just incredible, wasn't it?
It was absolutely splendid. I mean, it was. I think everyone was so pleased for him. He's such a nice guy, so humble, down to earth, but he's a hard worker. And he's just been brilliant this season, hasn't he? And then he seemed to have this sort of telepathic sort of connection with Lionel Messi. It was absolutely wonderful. And his contribution, getting a goal at the World Cup, I think was special. And setting up goals as well. And he's been celebrating, you know, ever since. So yeah, it was lovely to see him. He's such a nice guy, talking about, you know, the fans coming up and ringing his doorbell every morning at 8 o'clock to wake him up and celebrate. I mean, he's probably brilliant. A bit tired. I think he's but you know, I don't think he goes over the top in celebration. He wants to get back. Most people are back now, and he wants to just get back to playing football. I think he's one of those genuine people who actually just loves playing football. So, you know, he wanted to start last night, and he will want to start at the weekend. There's no two ways about it. Doesn't matter whether it's Middlesbrough away or France in the World Cup final. But it was great to see him. He's a lovely guy, and I'm pleased that the club celebrated it. Actually, I'm really pleased because look, it doesn't happen very often, does it? And I think it's interesting. I think someone said to me that there's 21 players who have been playing in the Premier League and won a World Cup. It's not many, is it?
It's not.
Is that all? I assumed there'd be a lot more than that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them are French. Yes. So from certain eras when they won, probably 98 has a few there. But, you know, and now one of those is an Albion player, and that's something that should be celebrated.
I would say there's a good number of those will probably be French, I would imagine. I mean, there was quite a lot of that French, particularly the 98 World Cup winning squad that were playing here, the likes of Henri, etc. It was
Vieira.
It is incredible, Johnny. And I was thinking about this the other day. Al, do you remember at the Goldstone as you walked into the ticket office, there was a board just behind that had the International Honours Board, and it had every Albion player that had ever represented their country whilst playing for
the Albion. Yeah, it didn't really bother the engravers too much, did it?
Not really. I mean,
think it was about four or five lines, if that. If we're talking into the early 80s, into the 80s, we had the likes of Robbo played a few games for Ireland. Budgie played a few games. Dean Saunders. I think probably after that, I wouldn't mind betting someone like Budgie was the last international we had in the Goldstone era. But apart from that, the list isn't exactly exhaustive. And it's interesting, it only took one plank of wood to actually have all those names up on there. But
I mean, it wasn't so long that we had Steve Penny on the show. And at that point, I probably need to double check this, but at that point, he was level pegging with Gerry Ryan for the most decorated international player at the Albion.
And I think it's now. I think it's now. When you say decorated, you mean most prolific?
In terms of appearances, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to look it up, but for a long time, it was Matty Ryan, who'd just overtaken Shane Duffy. But nowadays, I mean, I lose track as to who's done what, where, and when. So I wouldn't mind betting it still is Matty Ryan. But the point is that you'd need a few more planks of wood to have a proper honours ball for that. But to have one with a World Cup winner is absolutely astonishing. The number of times you read on social media, oh my God, just remember 20 years ago, 25 years ago, we were, as Johnny says, staring into the abyss, you know, playing flirting hooky with Doncaster Rovers at the bottom of the fourth division. We didn't have a ground, nor did they, because they burnt it down. And it was just horrible, horrible times. And yet, even if you rewind, I'm going to say even when we got to the Premier League 6 years ago, would you have said in 6 years' time, we're going to have a World Cup winner in our side? Not someone we bought who was a World Cup winner, but actually someone who we've taken on as a little sproglet. And had to buy him out of his loan because we needed him desperately. And someone who's come on leaps and bounds and has made football, frankly, look easy. And he made, as I said before, he made Leo Messi look a far better player than he was. And by that, I mean, we know that the bloke's a magician. But by that, it's clear that Argentina didn't play their best when McAllister wasn't playing. That man was the engine room of that team, and they really wouldn't have done it without him.
But I mean, another measure of how far we've come, Johnny, is like, I mean, the fact that we used to have to hunt around the internet, sometimes the dark web, to find coverage of Israel playing. So we had two internationals in that team.
Yes. It's like, yes, Adam Elant has been called up by Egypt. Yes. You know, it's like, you know, yes, it's happening. It's happening. Yes. Come on. These are the headlines. And, you know, I can remember reading it out on the airwaves. So
Andrew Ross got called up for Wales.
Yeah, Wales. Yeah, absolutely. And let's, no, we shouldn't make light of it because there's still amazing achievements to represent your country. But I think when you look back at it, and it's interesting you say from this sort of Premier League era, and I know it can be a touchy subject for a lot of people, but I wonder whether if you'd said to, and it'd be difficult, I don't know whether people would be honest about it, if you said to people on that first day against Manchester City in that first game, right, okay, I'm going to give you three seasons in the Premier League, would you take it? And then you go down. You know, if you'd said to them then...
I think that would have been... You know, that's a funny thing, actually. I actually genuinely thought if we were going to go down,
It would be the first two seasons. Okay. Yeah. So it's interesting that, you know, because there's that expectation, well, you know, you might do okay and you might, you know, because you got the momentum and all that. And then you'll probably just go back down. And I think that, you know, that's the incredible thing, the way that the club has built on it and built on it and built on it. And they've had to ride a few challenges, particularly in the last 12 months, haven't they? So, and they don't look weaker for it. And that's the wonderful thing about this.
I guess, Johnny, the benchmark for that would be, if you look at like clubs with big history, someone like Huddersfield, like Sheffield United, they both came up, had one decent season and went down the next season. So, I mean, that would be the similar sort of thing. So the fact that we have punched above our weight and actually continue to push upwards is amazing. Yes.
And the difficulty is, of course, if you do go down, is you can go down further because you do have the extra wages of players. And, you know, I don't know how many teams in the League One are ex-Premier League sides, but there's probably quite a few in there, whether it's Portsmouth, whether it's Sheffield Wednesday, you know, Sunderland were languishing, but they've managed to get up. Exactly. So I think that just goes to show the difficulties that you can have. But they've ridden that storm and you know, they've continued to build, which I think is probably the most impressive aspect of you know, the recent past.
And that was my point about, you know, with three seasons and down, I'm thinking, well, if we've actually managed to survive two, and bearing in mind that I think that irrespective of what Tony Bloom could promise or what he could provide or monetarily or get anything, all his ducks in a row or whatever it might be, is that seeing as, and I think the bare minimum that any football fan would expect, or certainly any Brighton fan would expect, is an improvement on what went before. Then if you've survived those two, then the greater expectation, even if you are still scraping just above the relegation zone, the expectation is that you want to see an improvement. And by the time, obviously, Graham Potter turned up for his first season, now the results didn't necessarily improve, but certainly the performances did. And it's kind of marked up, you know, to where we are now. I mean, I can say this name without really feeling I need to spit or anything like that. Because, I mean, there is this thing of what Graham Potter did and the schadenfreude around, you know, beating Chelsea and what happened. But there is an element of the fact that I don't think that Brighton fans really, or rather I do think that Brighton fans should have a level of gratitude for what he achieved. Because, therefore, De Zerbi's job would be so much harder and it will take so much longer for him to get where we are.
And that's about building blocks, isn't it, Al?
There is building blocks.
And it's the trust that Tony had in Graham, but also Graham sticking with that process as well. And, you know, Roberto coming in and saying, you know, I'm in the lucky position. It very rarely happens. You come in and take over a club in a really, really good position. Yeah. In a way, it's a very, very difficult thing to do. But he appreciated it. I will do things my own way, but I'm not going to totally change things because I appreciate things have gone very, very well. And this week, what an opportune moment, isn't it, really, to take this sort of view, because Albion are going to be playing Middlesbrough. We all remember that, you know, that day on the final day of the season.
Don't we?
we'll probably go through the pain of reliving it over and over again. That was a long journey home, I tell you. That one was.
Dale Stevens' red card. I'm still absolutely, you know, fuming about it.
I know, and it brings up these wounds, doesn't it? But at the same time, look at, you know, Middlesbrough, you know, haven't really had the success, you know, since then that the Albion have had. So we need to take stock of that. And, you know, probably this week is a good time to do it.
And I think that also, I think a lot of fans around the world are seeing this on two levels. One, they get to watch the Premier League across the world anyway, but two, the World Cup, you know, as much as we despised what happened with it and were uncomfortable with all the various aspects of it, I'm not going to go into the politics of it, but the fact is that the Football World Cup was in the middle of a football season. Mm. And therefore people's interest in football is still peaked, you know, albeit in the Northern Hemisphere in the winter. And a lot of Brighton players, certainly four or five, I would say they put themselves in the shop window because, frankly, the shutters are down on that one, I think. But, under other circumstances, you'd say they were in the shop window. And Mitoma, for many, many people, was a revelation. Caicedo, where's this kid come from? McAllister, hang on a minute, Scottish, Irish, what on earth are you doing playing for Argentina? And so on. And all these people that, frankly, because the interest in the Premier League is almost exclusively centred around the top six and Brighton are still under that radar. I mean, if that's the point as to whether Brighton were on the radar, in England, they're much more so, but around the world, still not, until such times you saw what McAllister was doing, what Mitoma was doing, what Caicedo was doing, what Estupiñán was doing. And these are players who are ours and have actually put Brighton on the map. They see McAllister comes back to a hero's welcome.
There was a great tweet that someone sent me last night, actually. I think it was something called Fake Carlton, I think it was called. Have you seen it? Brighton literally just invent players out of nowhere and they're immediately amazing. Evan Ferguson, sure, why not? Jeremy Sarmiento is definitely not a real name. Even Alexis McAllister didn't exist a year ago, and now he's everywhere. I mean, it pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? And I was at half time at Everton, you're sort of surrounded by the home fans, and these lovely, lovely Toffees fans came up and chatted to me for about 10 minutes, and they were just saying, and they weren't being disrespectful, they're just saying, we're just sitting here going, why are these guys doing it? Why aren't we doing it? And he said, this one guy said, I think most clubs in the Premier League are sitting there going, how can Brighton do this and we can't? And that is an incredible tribute to the work that's been done.
Absolutely.
They're including Brentford in that same conversation, which is obviously Matthew Benham at Brentford is obviously...
He was looking over Tony Bloom's shoulder these days, don't they?
But it's...
I reckon my theory is that Brighton planted a load of sleeper spies during the Cold War years. And they're now finally coming to fruition. You know, there'll be someone in the back streets of Buenos Aires. Yeah. There's someone sitting in a Trappist beer bar in Brussels. There's someone sort of wandering around the Alps in Austria and so on. Someone actually just went to university in Japan as a tutor and so on. And they said, right, okay, you guys. And now it's born fruition. That's my John Le Carré thing that did it for us.
But Al, you were saying there about it becoming the club becoming like worldwide. I was on the train coming home on after the Arsenal game, and my carriage was absolutely rammed full of Japanese people, which was absolutely wonderful. All of them had been to the shop. All of them had like Mitoma shirts or just anything with the Albion badge on it. It was absolutely delightful, and and it's just a shame they couldn't have been going home happier.
Well, Mitoma is actually now the Japanese poster boy, especially after the World Cup, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, they had their stars, they had their main man, but...
He's got it over the line.
Yeah. Yes. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. No. But anyway, but the point is that, you know, there he was, a sort of a 25-minute superstar in the games that he played. I mean, when you've got Mitoma, and I was watching this, because actually you're talking about these tweets, John. Union Saint-Gilloise tweeted saying... Yeah, we know what he can do. So yeah, they saw it last year. And when we were kind of keeping tabs on USG, because obviously it's Tony Bloom's other club, and there he was coming off the bench. And yeah, I think he scored a hat-trick as a substitute at some point last season. And each goal was exactly the same as the other one. In other words, embarrassing the right back before planting it in the far corner. Yeah. So we had an idea as to what we could expect, but there's a massive difference between the Jupiler League and the Premier League.
That's Dennis Undav's finding out.
Well, exactly. And Matoma's made that step up in ways that obviously not everyone can. But, you know, our hit rate at the moment, and you point out Dennis Undav, as much as our scouting system is being revered around the world, it's still not 100% accuracy.
I still think that, I mean, I don't know what the situation, why he's not been on the bench for the last couple of games. Apparently is a personal issue. But, you know, I still think there's a lot to come from him. By his own admission, he said that he's not quite up to speed yet. And, you know, sometimes it does take time for people to settle. It doesn't necessarily happen overnight, which is why it's interesting that people are already writing off Iba Suma at Spurs and Cucurella at Chelsea. They haven't had a chance.
I've written them off already. Don't worry, mate. For me, like I say, as I put again on social media, they're a cautionary tale. If anyone wants to go to the bright lights for a big payoff, fine, go to the bright lights for a big payoff, but don't expect your career to prosper necessarily.
I suspect he will become the player.
I'm sure he will.
Designed, but he might need a different manager to do it. But okay, but let's briefly mentioned the Arsenal game there. Let's have a quick look over that one. Johnny, I mean, let's start with the end of that game rather than beginning. We all know what happened, but I'm still scratching my head about how that's offside when you're running away from the ball. Running away from in a different direction.
I know.
If your leg is behind the defender, surely the defender's got the advantage if you're running in the opposite direction.
I don't think the law accounts for that, mate.
Well, unfortunately, yes. When it's forensic, that's it, isn't it? And I had this debate with Warren in the commentary. And he said, Johnny, you know, offside, it's offside. It's just a fact. And it was such a shame, I think, because I think most people, and I've heard a few neutrals even say it, that they just wanted... you know, probably 10 minutes of mayhem at the end, because it would have been just so wonderful, wouldn't it? Yeah. One thing I would say about that game and the change towards the end, and particularly because you're talking about Kaoru Mitoma, I think things changed in terms of him becoming more of a threat. It started when Ben White came off and Tomiyasu came on. And I think what we're seeing there is not only, you know, the ability of Kaoru Mitoma, but also the quality of Ben White. Because he did keep him quiet for quite a large part of that game. And as soon as he came off, Albion looked more dangerous on that flank. you know, it was ridiculous, wasn't it? But I think he's going to go on to score more goals. He had a few that header. Obviously, not his probably strongest point. Because he could have scored early there, wasn't he? And, you know, one was saying, you know, he probably feels he should have had a hat trick last night with a couple of other chances. Yeah, wonderful player. And I think he always just gives you hope and he gives you opportunities. And he seems so calm. I think his judgment is great. When he hits that byline, that little nudged ball towards the byline, it doesn't go over, literally, as we see the ball go. But he does, you know what I mean? He's waiting for the challenge, I'll tease you, and then I'll go. And it's so difficult to defend
it's
against.
It's just fun.
I don't know if it's true or not. It deserves to be true if it isn't. Is that his degree was in... it was kind of, well, it said dribbling, but it was,
yes, I think that was his dissertation. I think I could give credit to Louis Miles, who sent it to me. I think it was an article about the fact that he didn't sign pro forms when he was 16 years of age, and he did his dissertation at the University of Tsukuba or whatever it was. It was all about dribbling and how to use your core to be able to dribble as fast as you can, but also commit a defender into either a mistake or falling over. So, I mean, talk about forensic approach to something. Yeah. It's just so Japanese, isn't it? It's just wonderful.
Dr. Dribble.
But also, how many dribblers are there in the Premier League now? There's not too many players like him, really. I don't think. I mean, I think actually Leandro Trossard is not a bad.
Yeah, it's a dying art, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, or maybe it just doesn't happen quite so much in the Premier League. I mean, his numbers at USG were just off the scale.
Yes,
they were. Yeah. I mean, I know that league is that league, and we can debate that another time. But his numbers were off the charts, and in terms of value, just looks fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about traditional wingers, really, which I think with the
but he doesn't cross, does he, AD?
Yeah, well, not well.
We're not really. He's not a crosser of the ball. No, you know, when you talk about wingers, I often think of people who curl the ball into the box, and you know, with a bit of height and a bit of width and all that. It's not that kind of player, is it? And maybe this is a change in football. And you look at Pep Guardiola's side, they don't really cross the ball. They quite often get to the byline, cut it back or across the face of goal, or they back and recycle again. Maybe it's just a trend. I don't know. Maybe.
How many goals in the Premier League? I mean, it's a hypothetical question, but how many goals in the Premier League are scored by the cross coming in from out wide and being headed in from that point in between the 6-yard line and the penalty spot? As a goal... That's a dying art these days.
The number nine is back.
Well, that is an interesting debate, actually, because you look at Mitrovic, he does seem to manage to score goals like that, doesn't Haaland. He? He's Haaland, you'd probably say. Nunez is maybe a little bit different, but yeah. And then Albion go and find an 18-year-old who can do it as well as anybody, can't they? Yeah. And he is probably the all-round number nine, Evan Ferguson, isn't he? He's the right shape. He's got the movement. He's got the confidence.
He doesn't have any more growing pains.
Growing pains, yeah. Well, he's... He certainly, I think, got the full package. It certainly feels that to me. There was a lovely bit. We mentioned it briefly in the commentary. Not only just for the goal, and that was great because he tucked it away nicely, but for Solly March's goal, he passed it on to him and then he ran behind Solly just to give the two defenders, hang on, who do we go with here? Do we go with Ferguson or do we go with March? And it's that movement. And Warren was talking about it as an ex-striker. He said movement. He's never standing still until he needs to. And that's something that Glenn Murray did really, really well. Always moving. Yes. But sometimes it's good to just stand still and stay in the box. And it came to him, didn't he? Just tucked it away. Knew where it was going to be. Same wavelength as Sarmiento, tucks it away. But when he passed it to March, he didn't stand still and just say, oh, there you go, Solly, you do whatever you need to do. He kept moving and kept them occupied. And I think that was quite an important point. And
therein lies another point, doesn't it? I mean, as much as people have been screaming about, oh, we need a striker, and we haven't played with a striker, because I still don't count Danny Welbeck as a striker, not the way he's been playing, certainly in the latter days under Potter and under De Zerbi. I consider him to be a kind of more of an advanced midfielder, someone who brings everyone else into play. He's not the one who finishes the chances. He's the one that actually, you get the ball to him and he'll spray it out to everyone else. And that's the way we've been playing for quite a while. And with Ferguson, I think that he's actually A, capable of doing that and playing a number nine. So effectively, I mean, when they talk about he's halfway between a true and a false number nine, AD, it's for you to come up with what halfway between true and false really is. It's a half true number nine.
It's Truls is what it is.
He's a half true.
I mean, with Danny, the way that he worked under Potter, I think he was given more license underground because he was actually starting. He was always better coming in from wide and actually splitting the central defenders. But all the time under De Zerbi so far, he has been playing as a number one, more as a target man rather than actually like moving the defenders around. But
I think that's the concern you have. I mean, there is an element. I mean, he does take up certain elements of Welbeck. He takes up certain elements of Murray, because Murray for me is a 6-yard sniffer. When he was sort of like 30, 40 yards out, and the ball would go to him. He always had to have someone around him because sometimes his first touch, his close control, was not the best. With Welbeck, it's a lot better. And so it's sometimes difficult to compare and contrast, especially when we're talking about A, an 18-year-old kid who B, hasn't even played 100 minutes for his first team. However, you can see the bits and pieces that he can do. But I think the other thing about it is that I suspect that when Welbeck is ready and fit, and he'll be getting back in, because one thing you really don't want to do is burn an 18-year-old out, and especially at a top 10 Premier League side, and burden him with expectations.
Ali, I was going to say, just one to point out is he is a bit of an unknown quantity for opponents as well, which is going to work to his favour. I'm not going to sort of maybe bring Aaron Connolly into this conversation now, but you know, when players come onto the scene, if people don't know about them, but people do learn how to defend against people, so that's going to be a challenge for Evan going forward. I think
absolutely. So he's an unknown quantity for now.
I think so too.
I mean, like you said, I mean, we had so much great expectations about Aaron, and it's like, and I just think that Evan is a lot more level headed, and I think he's got better people around him. I think that the fact that we've given him an extension so soon on his contract, I think that speaks volumes. I think the club have got a lot of great hopes for him. He could have gone out on loan. We decided to keep him here because,
to be honest, our options are a bit thin at the moment, aren't they, AD?
That might change because he'll want to play regularly. I think you're right, Al, in the sense you don't want to burn someone out, but at the same time, you know, you look at what it's done for. Say, look at Vicar Gyökeres, who has really gone. I think he's taken his game to another level, and that's probably through playing Championship football regularly and now being courted by Premier League clubs. So. It'll be an interesting sort of journey ahead of him. I'd have asked him that on occasions. He said, I'm quite happy either way, actually. I'm quite happy here to learn. And I'm quite happy to go out. I think you just have to see, but obviously, you know, we have to wait and see what happens come the end of January in terms of any other possible business. But, he seems to be the perfect sort of backup, doesn't he, in terms of if Danny's not available.
Yeah, well, one player that does seem to be garnering some interest with a lot of clubs in the window is going to be Leandro Trossard. Now, since the World Cup, actually, I would actually include the World Cup in this, because I don't think he pulled up any trees when he did play for Belgium. But Trossard, I mean, he's been getting a few pelters recently, but I mean, against Arsenal, he did have a couple of opportunities, and he didn't shirk it. But it's just that he does tend to blow hot and cold at times, doesn't he?
But he's always done that, to be fair. He's always done that. And he did hit a rich stream of form between. And I do go on about it a lot, I know. But since that Arsenal game in April, towards the end of last season, where you saw the Albion go up a gear. And, you know, he would then sort of have a lot of fun with so many other defences and score a lot of goals. Hey, he scored a hat-trick at Anfield. Not many opposition players get to do that. But it's form. It's, you know, the class is there. We know the talent is there. And the World Cup wouldn't have helped him. I'm on my best, you know, because despite their stellar lineup, Belgium were poor, poor, poor. And he was mediocre in a poor side. That was such a badly managed side. And actually indicative of the fact that you can have all the talent in the world. But if you've got 11 players playing as individuals rather than... I'll put this to you. Anytime we've gained promotion, there's always a player you think, I don't remember him with us. He was rubbish, but he was an intrinsic part of the team, because you don't necessarily need 11 superstars to go up. You need a coherent, functioning, working team. And Trossard.
I think a couple of points on Leandro is, you've got to ask yourself the question, who scored more goals in the Premier League for the Albion this season than anyone else?
Yes.
Leandro Trossard.
His form, though, that's the point, isn't it?
No, but he's also playing in a different position as well. He's not playing on the left-hand side. He's playing through the middle, you know, and he's up there on his own. And that probably doesn't suit him. I don't think that's his best. I think he can play there, but I don't think that's his best position. You look at the heat map from where he scores his goal, left side of the penalty area. Yep. I think the dilemma now, of course, is you've got Karu Mitoma. So, you know, where do you fit Leandro into that team? And maybe if Danny Welbeck was available up top, you could play him just behind. You know, there's other different possibilities there. So I think we mustn't get too carried away. The Belgium thing, yes, it was poor for Belgium. You know, there was talk, wasn't there, of, you know, a fallout between certain players, including Leandro and others, probably didn't help. And I think also we must remember the enormity of that competition to come right in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
And the emotional drain, the psychological drain of being away, it might have affected him in lots of different ways. Or it might be just a little bit of a loss of form. So I think I must say we don't want to get too carried away. We know he's a quality player. On his day, he's sensational. And there will be interest. But I still think he has a very big role to play this season.
Surely, Johnny, you're not suggesting that players are actually human beings and they don't have emotions or they're not just to be seen as commodities. Surely not.
Well, one day people like me as well, we'll all be robots, won't we? It won't be AI
commentator.
Well, I'm sure it'll happen one day. Maybe
you're not actually talking to us. What you're actually talking to is a photograph that they took in 1972. So, you know,
God, if I look like this in 1972.
Actually,
funnily enough, here's a picture I have. I mean, of course, I wasn't even born then, chaps, really.
No.
I think you know the truth on that one. Yes, I
of
was.
Course I do.
I think everything goes in phases, doesn't it? And everyone hits hot streaks, everyone struggles a little bit. I don't see it. Sometimes I know people question his commitment and maybe he favours those sort of, you know, those big games against big teams, you know, and it's difficult to maybe get up. But I think he might just be finding a little bit of a struggle. I think Moran made a really good point last night. They were winning that game 3-0. Why would you bring on Trossard? Why would you bring him on at that point in the game? If they were losing 2-0 and you needed something to happen, he thought he would have come on. But he didn't. He said, no, let's just give him 90 minutes off. Let's give him a break. You know, he's travelled. Okay, fine. But let's just keep him out of the firing line. We don't need to run him. We don't need to risk an injury. Let's have him available for Saturday.
So and, I think that was a good point.
Instead of 4-0 up, we brought on a world champion. You know.
Well, yes. Yeah, but he probably wanted a little bit of match sharpness, didn't he, to probably get back into it because he's only trained four times, I think, since, you know, the World Cup or whatever. So
You might win the World Cup in Qatar, mate, but can you do it on a Tuesday night on the banks of the Mersey?
Yeah. Okay. Do you know what? He didn't even break out of a jog, I don't think. It was so easy at that point in the game, wasn't it? They were just pinging it around. It was like, you know,
it was fun.
Warren said it's like a Premier League team against a Sunday League team. It was that's what it was like in that 15-minute spell when they were just pinging it around, one-touch football. No one needed to break into a run because and it was really interesting. I spoke to Roberto De Zerbi afterwards, and the first thing he said, I said, how special was that win? Because it was the first time, wasn't it, that Albion had scored four away in the top flight. He just said, I'm very disappointed with that first half performance. That was his first reaction.
He had the arse, didn't he, after that game?
I wouldn't use that word myself, but yes, you could say that. Or maybe it was just me. I don't know. But no, he was disappointed. He said the positioning on the pitch was wrong. You know, he said great in the second half. And that's when it all came together because he obviously felt his players weren't in the right position. So, he was not critical, but he wasn't happy. So that was quite interesting, wasn't it?
Interview with the Sky Sports bloke as well that I saw. He said, you know, play against Arsenal, we lose, play quite well. I mean, I think it's obviously he's talking about the last 20 minutes. We win 4-1 tonight, and I'm not happy with the way that we did that, and we've got a lot to learn still. I like the cut of his jib if he's going to come out of that, smashing Everton 4-1, sending the opposition home in a chorus of boos, and he's not happy. He's thinking, right, you lot, back in tomorrow morning, because we've got a lot to talk about. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, and he wants to play a certain way. I said to him, I said, you know, Lewis and Rob seemed very upset. And he said, good, you know, I want them to be upset. You know, he wants to strive for perfection. He wants them to play his way. And if they're not playing his way, you know, in a very sort of stylized, special way, he's not happy. And I think that's got to be a good thing. I'm with you there. I think it was refreshing to hear.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show, as ever, is brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given us yet another lovely shirt for us to describe. Have you got it there, Johnny?
I have. I'm just having a look. So thank you very much indeed. Let me see. Oh, yes. Very nice indeed. Am I meant to know what it is?
Well, can you describe it first?
I've just suddenly realised I haven't got my glasses on. looks like a black body with white sleeves, but not over the shoulders. So really just from your sort of top of your biceps down, short sleeve shirt with white. The rest is black. Am I allowed to say the sponsor?
We're not the BBC here, John.
Oh, that's right. I can say whatever I want. It's made by Nike, and the sponsor is New Holland Fiat Group. The badge is slightly blurry, but there's certainly an O in there.
Phil's been mucking about in Photoshop, actually.
Oh, has he? Okay. Well, that's fair enough. So I quite like it, actually. It has a slight sort of Brazilian feel to it for me.
Any idea who it might be?
I say that. I'll go for Ostend.
Very Brazilian.
Yeah, as well Brazilian as you can get.
I couldn't think of one beginning with an O in Brazil, so I've gone for Ostend instead.
Well, the thing is, the New Holland thing makes me think either it could be someone from the Low Countries, as you say.
Is Ostend Holland? It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
What,
yeah.
Or am I being totally
Ostend
stupid?
In Belgium.
Belgium.
I failed my geography O level, clearly.
But I'm just thinking New Holland makes me think something from Lincolnshire, which is obviously where I spent my Christmas. I'm going to guess Boston.
You would be incorrect. Do you want to have a go at the year?
Looking at that style, Phil, I'm going to say that's fairly recent. I'm going to say 2017.
I think it's early 2000s, I'd say.
Okay. Well, this is what Phil has to say about this particular shirt, which you can see as well of over 130,000 other shirts on oldfootballshirts.com. But here is your shirt of the week, and this is the 2008 to 2009 third shirt of Italian giant Juventus.
Oh, we're close then.
I chose this shirt as it's been posted onto Old Football Shirts today by a Ukrainian who has just been able to get back online. He seemed quite pleased about this, as we all should be. It's a step in the right direction, says Bill. Anyway, about Juventus then. They were formed in 1897 and they go by several nicknames. We've got La Vecchia Signora, which is the old lady. La Fiandazza d'Italia, which is the girlfriend of Italy, La Madama, Madam, Il Bianco Neri, the black and whites, La Zebra, the zebras, La Signora Omicidi, the killer lady, and La Gueva, the hunchback. Strange when you consider most of people simply call them Juve. Home is the rarely full 41,507 capacity Juventus Stadium, which averaged a gate of just 23,000 last season. Juventus have won Serie A 36 times, the Coppa Italia 14 times, the Italian Super Cup 9 times, and in addition, they have around 11 European titles. Entitlement alert, says Phil. I'm informed that last season was their first trophyless season since 2010, the poor loves. Juventus' original kit was pink, worn incongruously with a black tie. They found that the shirts faded too quickly in the wash, prompting the club to ask their English player, John Savage, if he knew of any company in the UK that could supply them with better kits. John had a friend in Nottingham who was involved with Notts County, and he found a set of kit to send to Italy. And from 1903 onwards, Juventus wore black and white striped kit. The first team squad is pretty impressive. The likes of Paul Pogba, Roger Chesney, Danilo, Leonardo Bonucci, that's keeping them third in the table at the moment. In addition to that, they have over 30 players out on loan, most of whom have come through Juve's academy. Alessandro Del Piero holds the record for most appearances with 705, and the most goals scored with 290, and he also has the most goals scored with 290. Luigi Buffon follows him closely with 685 appearances, but no goals for the goalkeeper. Links to the UK include Aaron Ramsey, Patrick Vieira, Nicholas Bentner, Cristiano Ronaldo, Paolo Di Canio. There's quite a lot of them. Links to the Albion are fewer and far between. Liam Brady made 76 appearances for Juve between 1980 and 82. He obviously managed the Albion between 93 and 95. Andy Zakiri played in the Juventus youth side from 2016 to 2017. And Amanda Nilden left Brighton in 2020 and is now playing for Juve Women. So thank you for that very much, Phil. And like I said, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over on oldfootballshirts.com of many colours and actually some with tassels. You can't go wrong with a shirt with tassels, can you?
Or broccoli, or beer, or sausages, or...
Broccoli. The broccoli one is good, I got to
the
say.
Fiat thing on the front there should have been a bit of a giveaway, actually, because obviously Juve are owned by, well...
One thing that is obscured is the badge, isn't it? So you can't see the badge. But aren't Juve the club that changed their badge to that quite controversial double J?
Yes.
It was something else before, wasn't it?
There was black and white stripes.
Yeah, it was a sort of shield, wasn't it? I remember. I'm just trying to think. Baggio was he in that kit at one point? That's the kit. Look, didn't seem to have that, and now it's all got this sort of double J. It's sort of taking it into the modern times, isn't it?
I think they did that just about the time they moved into their new stadium, and it's interesting. One stat I can say with Phil there is that the opening game at their new stadium was Juve against Notts County. I think I could be wrong, but I think that actually Juve played in their pink shirts that day. So I think actually when you say
what about black ties, we're wearing the black ties.
It would have been nice. But yeah,
I think their third kit is still pink, isn't it? I think their third kit is.
Yes, I think it is. They're owned by the Agnelli family, which also owns Fiat. And the Agnelli family. Let's not get too much into this because this is where Kieran Maguire comes in. But some people are asking them questions that are making them feel a little bit uncomfortable.
There are rumours that the Agnelli they may not be the owners for very much longer.
Well, exactly, and the ESL can therefore blow up in its face.
Which is actually, I believe it's this will be the 100th year of the Agnelli family being involved with Juve. So it'll be quite, if they only make it to 99 years, that would not be so good. But that actually is a nice segue there, Al, because one person that did only make it to 99 years.
Only, crikey, blimey, we only ever made, or only made it to 99. No, it's, for those who listen to the show and know how much both AD and I are involved in the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund, charity. Douglas Eaton, who was Robert's father, sadly passed away on the 28th of December, having had, I'm told by his family, a wonderful Christmas. So that's a nice way to sign off, I guess. 4 months short of his 100th birthday. Doug could have easily hidden his grief and just to explain what happened, Robert was a Brighton fan who died in the 9/11 attacks, and a charity was set up in his name to raise funds for children and youth sports clubs around the world. And this is obviously with the blessing of the Eaton family, especially Doug and Laura, his parents, Robert's parents. And Doug was a very, very keen supporter of the charity. He took it as a matter of pride that from a tragedy that his son's name was used as a force for good. He was always there at the charity games until probably about 4 or 5 years ago. We're talking to the fact that he'd turn up in his early 90s. He loved having his pictures taken with the Palace cheerleaders, whilst Laura would just sort of have another glass of wine and roll her eyes and say, "Oh, that's Doug for you." But Doug would be there presenting the trophies until it got to a bit too much for him. But you know, the entire family are very supportive of the charity, and I don't think it would have been the success that it was, but for their support. So we do offer our sincerest condolences to the Eaton family, to the three daughters, Barbara, Judith and Angela, that he leaves behind. And we thank Doug for the support that he gave the charity that made it the success that it was. So with great appreciation, we say rest in peace, Doug Eaton.
Absolutely. And I'm sure many of our listeners will concur with that. Now, okay, so 2022, Johnny, that started with a win away at Everton, and it went on to be quite the record-breaking year. 2023 has begun with a win at Everton, and this could also be a record-breaking year.
Yeah, it certainly could be. I think, yeah, this squad, this club has smashed so many records. Every time I have to keep dipping in and finding new ones because they keep breaking them. It's wonderful. And who knows where they could be. And we talked about the World Cup players. A lot of them have already talked to Caicedo and McAllister about a possible European place or maybe a cup run. I think it was a big shame about the League Cup because then that presented a really good opportunity.
But
I myself am going to be making a pilgrimage over to New York in July, because I want to go to, I suppose the Twin Towers and where it was and Ground Zero. And, you know, I know Robert was, well loved. And I think it's great work that everyone's done on that charity. So well done to everyone. And hopefully when I head there, because he worked for Cantor Fitzgerald, actually. No relation, though.
Right.
In terms of the company that he worked for. But hopefully when I go there, I'll be thinking not only about a pre-season trip to the United States, but also a possible European trip as well, because I think they've got the capability there. If they keep the squad together, I think this season could be special. And I think it could be a summer of celebration. Yeah.
Haven't you? You've been invited over there with Warren, haven't you, to go and do some stuff with the New York Seagulls, and
Warren's just going to
their bars and stuff, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm going over just with my family because I was meant to go for my a large birthday recently, but because of lockdown, it never happened, and I've never been, and I've always wanted to go. And I've spoken to a lot of ex players do go there regularly, so I'd like to go there. They said that they'll welcome us. And I know that there is talk about this little competition between Premier League sides, and potentially Albion could be part of that. And I think with their connections with, clubs around the East Coast, that's probably where they would be based rather than the West Coast. So it could be a very exciting trip. And, you know, we know about the network of Albion fans, don't we, with the Stateside Seagulls.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the Brighton Bard in Tulsa. We've got that wonderful network. I think it would be absolutely brilliant. And I'm hopefully going to be over there in July, and if it coincides. And sadly, I don't think the BBC budget will send me over there. But if it were to coincide, that would be, I might just have to just slip Warren into my baggage, I think, to get out.
I was about to say, you go on your own family holiday, and if there's a BBC budget, we'll hang on to your coattail.
I think it would be brilliant, wouldn't it? And I think there was a recent where we had one of the guests on the Albion Unlimited podcast, and they were talking about the Premier League event that was done in Philadelphia, and I really do think now, and it'd be interesting to see what happens after this World Cup, because it's a global event. You know, the States did pretty well, didn't they? They just faltered slightly, but they were quite entertaining, weren't they? And there isn't massive interest because of, American football and baseball and basketball. But actually, it is growing, particularly on that East Coast. So I think they want to harbour better relations over statesides, the Albion. It seems a natural fit. Obviously, Paul Barber's got great connections on that side of the country as well. So, it could be a really exciting summer if they were to go there rather than, I seem to remember, going to a pre-season friendly at Scunthorpe. And I have to say, I think there were rail problems. I think it was 0-0 as well. So Tim Carter probably had to put me right on that one. But I seem to coming home from that thinking, what am I doing? Pre-season friendly at Scunthorpe. And how things have changed. So it would be great to see them playing a New York side.
I could be wrong about the timing, but while you're there, I think it'll be the Women's World Cup on at the same time. And of course, in America, women's football is certainly better in pro rata, but it's bigger and better in America. So there's an opportunity there, I guess, for not just, for the Albion to make new friends, but for there to be links between what is actually a kind of a slightly more advanced setup in terms of women's football compared to England. England are going to be there or thereabouts in the tournament. Not necessarily the favourites, but certainly, sort of one of the teams to look out for now that we're the European champions.
Very much so. Very much so.
Time,
And, you know, I remember first covering an England game, England women's game, about, must have been 13 years ago now. And it was, you know, the States was the pinnacle because there's so many women playing the game.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we've made such strides. It's fantastic. But, yeah, I mean, what's there's no reason why they can't be do it across all different, you know, parts of their football club to be going out there and establishing those relationships. But but maybe we'd rather be going to Europe in July for that, you know, first qualifying round of the Europa Conference League. Ed, I don't know. We'll probably end up drawing. I joked with the Irish Seagulls talking about, yeah, we'll probably end up getting somewhere in Ireland. And no disrespect to Ireland, because it's a lovely country.
So long as we don't have a repeat of the Battle of Longford. So
no, definitely not. But I mean, I did notice when you were sort of talking about the New York, the connections there, you did make a slight error there, Johnny. I mean, you talked about Paul Barber and his connections over there. What you really meant to say was Paul Barber OBE, wasn't it?
I did. Apologies. Yes. Yes. Do you have to say that every time? I don't know. I've just dropped mine. I mean, you know, I don't use mine anymore.
You refuse yours, didn't you?
Yeah. I know. I mean, and sir gets in the way at the front. I find that really quite off-putting.
Well, I think actually the way he spells it, I think he's just calling him Paul Barbarobe.
Barbara, I don't think he'd appreciate that. Done to him as well for everything he's done terrific. In his career.
It is terrific, really. And again, great news for the club. But I mean, going back to what 2023 has got to hold.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I digressed.
That was fine.
That's all right. I mean, you know, like it was a record-breaking season last year, and you know, record points tally, record number of goals. In fact, actually, I mean, in terms of the number of goals, last year we scored 42 league goals. This year,
the calendar year?
No, it's 21-22.
Okay.
This year, we're up to 32 after 17 matches. So,
do you know what that means? That Andy Bass might finally
get a
prediction right.
After
we talked about goals, didn't we? I mean, what has he got? 21 goals in 11 games in charge. Yes. If that continues, you know,
that's a rate of what, 75 goals a season.
So, yeah, so very good maths. We're going to have to do it till we're 18. My standing point is that it's going to be a very interesting, probably 18 months for the club, because they've got to this point. It's kind of, where do you go from here? Because it's so difficult to break into that top four, top six. So where do you want to be? Where can you be? Obviously, some things are outside of your control, but they've got the structure. They've got the players at the moment. They're in that sort of, do we keep hold? Do we keep going? Do we strengthen? Do we push on? Or do we kind of just, you know, trying to, you know, you've got to move forward to stand still a little bit sometimes in the Premier League. So I think it's going to be really, really interesting.
I was going to say, given that certain clubs of, not necessarily our size, but certainly with a bigger history and maybe probably a few more quid than us, have got into Europe. They're not one of the big six, but they've got into Europe, and their league form has not kind of suffered. And I'm thinking of Birmingham and Wigan when they were doing it, and Wolves and Burnley and
Portsmouth
and West Ham now. So given that that's obviously, you know, we like to think of ourselves as a well-run club, and the spectre of European football is on the horizon for us. Have you had any sort of inkling, John, from the club as to how they're going to approach this as the season gets? I mean, we're not halfway yet, but, you know, we dare to dream that, you know, that come April, May, that there's a decision has to be made, and that the budgets have to be, you know, sort of squared away. Have you got an inkling as to how the club's approaching this at the moment?
I think it approaches it in a very similar way to how it's done things in the past, with scenario A, scenario B, and scenario C. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. It does put an immense strain. And the other night when there were people missing, you looked at the Albion bench and, you know, there's five under 23s on there, really. And that just goes to show that, you know, things get really stretched for you. But what do you want? Do you want to win things?
Do you want
to go to Europe? Do you want to have that experience? Or do you just want to tread water? I mean, people have suffered. You know, Burnley, Birmingham, Wigan, Southampton went to Europe for a little bit, didn't they?
Yeah.
So it's a difficult one. But I think what they'll have is those different scenarios in their mind. What would they do? When would they need to trigger certain things? Where would they need to strengthen? Where would they want to? What kind of campaign would they want from it? And take it from there, because it will put an extra strain. But they won't be getting ahead of themselves, I don't think. You've got to look at it. And I think for all the great work that Albion have done, so have Brentford. Fulham look strong. There's other sides in that middle of the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. But, so we're not even at halfway of the season, let's face it.
I've said it on this show hundreds of times before, Johnny. Your job as a football club is to be as successful as possible. And that means like finishing as high up the table as you can, try to win as many trophies as you can. Doesn't matter what trophy is, be it the JPT or
yeah, but it's the extent to which you're
Cup,
stretching your resources,
the Premier League,
isn't
or the
it?
FA Cup or the League Cup. It doesn't matter what it is. Your job as a football club is to try and be as successful as you can. And like, you just aim. I mean, I always makes me laugh. Always, you know, this race for fourth. You know, I mean, I suppose for us finishing fourth would be is an achievable dream. I think it is something we could do. I mean, you only have to look at the example that Leicester put down. And yes, I do realise that that is probably a once in a lifetime scenario, but it lays down a marker to show that. Oh, actually, no. If you go out onto the grass and you are successful, you have a good team, and you. Put the points on the board. Anything is achievable.
How did you feel when you got to the FA Cup semi-final? How did Albion fans feel thinking, you know, if we could go the whole way and win this thing?
Well, I'd be happy if we weren't playing Man City.
That was unfortunate, wasn't it? Yeah. And actually, Kyle Walker should have been sent off anyway. But that's by the by. Yeah. But it creates something special, doesn't it? It's that memory, that buzz. You know, I don't like semi-finals being at Wembley, but you know,
he does.
We went to Wembley, didn't we?
Yeah.
Do we want that again? And that's why I think it was a shame about the League Cup, actually. I know Man City won 6 out of the last 10, so they generally go and win it anyway. But I think that would be special. And I've said this to people before, you know, what would you choose? Would you love to sneak in at 7th, or would you rather go to an FA Cup final? Which would you take? And I think it's about creating memories. And I know people have different opinions about Graham Potter, but he quite often used to say, we've just got to enjoy these moments. Yeah. Let's make them. Let's create them. And then let's enjoy them. And then
the point you were making, AD, about a team finishing, you know, the Albion finishing fourth. Yeah, it's something to strive for. But as I've said on this show, the difference between 8th and 12th at the moment, we're treading water way above 8th at the moment. But the difference between 8th and 12th is very, very little. So the difference between then 7th is huge, to 6th is huge, to 5th is, and to get from above 4 to 1, wow, that's astronomical.
And you have to
consider the resources that we've got. So, and it's the phrase that Johnny used earlier, it's building blocks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Basingstoke might have been built in a day, but Rome wasn't. So,
but then you're back to Gus Poyet's glass ceiling again.
No, I don't think so. Because with that consideration, it was a limit that the club had set. But I think what we're talking about here is actually maximising the resources we've got without actually being silly about it, frankly. Silly money on a player that, you know, could turn out to be a complete lemon. That kind of thing. And as you know, it's about running the club appropriately. Run it well and the rewards will, provided everyone's facing the same way, eventually come along.
Yeah, but I mean, then you're back to the thing, and this is something, I don't know if you saw this last night, Johnny, I think Al alluded to it earlier, but if you just searched Brighton scouting, you just went through this whole litany of glories. Like, how do they do it? Where do they keep finding these people? How are they doing it? This is what we should be doing. How are they doing it? It was just glorious, wasn't it, Al?
Absolutely, and therein lies the point. We are a well-run club. We are progressive. And the point is the fact that no one else is doing it is neither here nor there. You know, we're breaking traditions. We're actually breaking through that glass ceiling.
It's finding the next market. It's finding the next one, because other people will copy. Other people will chase. Every people will imitate. It's about going to find the next thing. And the glory of it all is that Tony Bloom, I think, is the sort of person that will already be looking at the next market. He was the one that came up with the model of having, you know, another club that he was involved in that could provide that. Look at other clubs that are trying to do exactly the same. You know, the youth structure with academies, people suddenly thinking, actually, how much money could that save in the long run? It's that holistic approach that he always takes, which I think holds the club in good stead. And he's always, didn't he say, that fans forum top 10 established club. That's what I want. And of course, if you can do that, then you might just be able to just spin off into cups and Europe, you know, maybe one year or another, and enjoy those moments as well. I feel confident, you know, with him in place that's going to be the next step.
But that is all we have got time for this week. So, of course, thank you so much to Johnny Cantor for joining us. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. Online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on a podcast and association with OldFootballShirts.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all again next week. Bye. I was chilling in the shine of the light, and I dialed doing anything my radio advised. Songs bringing tears in my eyes. I was seriously thinking about hiding the receiver when the switch broke, cause it's old. They're saying things that I can hardly believe. They really think we're getting out of control. Radio is a sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the voice of reason. You better listen to the radio. I wanna bite the hand that feeds me. I wanna bite that hand so badly. I wanna make them wish they never sent me. Some of my friends sit around every evening and they worry about the times ahead. But everybody else is overwhelmed by indifference and the promise of an early bed. You either shut up or get cut out. They don't want to hear about it. It's only inches on the reel-to-reel. And the radio is in the hands of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel. Radio is a sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. So you better listen to the voice of choice, 'cause they think that it's treason. So you had better